Hello.
And welcome to BSP, Believer Skeptic Podcast.
The podcast where two idiots debate weird phenomena.
I'm Chris. I'm the believer.
I'm Cody. I'm the skeptic.
And if this is your first time listening to us, we're an LGBTQ paranormal comedy podcast and proud members of the Podmoth Network.
Yes, and this is a minisode.
Yes, it is.
And before I say my dumb little thing I was about to say, a minisode is, basically, we take a... Well, I don't even know what I'm talking. We can't even edit these. We don't edit our minisodes, by the way, so you get to hear us in our glory. Every other week, we bring you a full episode, about 48 minutes long of topics, and stories, and information. And in the interim weeks, we bring you a minisode with one story each that teases the upcoming topic. So it's kind of like a game.
Yes.
And I have found out what I was going to say is, you know how like those people in theater mouth along with the other person speaking, you know, whenever they're bad actors? You've said that proud members of the Podma thing so many times that I was like going, an LGBTQ and I was mouthing the whole thing.
So you could,
I don't know. It was just, I was just saying it along. I don't know.
In case I forgot, so you could tag on to it.
Yeah, just in case it was a mess. But anyway, so for this minisode, do you think it's going to be obvious or not? Because our last one was hard.
Not with my
story. Oh, God.
Yeah, nobody guessed the last one, I don't think. Either.
I'm not surprised.
I think a few people commented that it was hard. Yeah.
Oh, I feel like this one is, for me, maybe more direct. But there's the story. Okay, my story is long, and it's so weird and winding that you could probably take 10 topics out of it.
Yeah, this mine's not that long, but it goes a few different ways. So it could be a number of things is the thing.
Interesting.
So do you want to go first or me?
Well, let's see. I think I went first last time. Okay. So do you want to jump in? How long is yours?
Not long.
There have been so many like size jokes that you usually like jump in on. But yeah, go for it.
Okay. So for my story today, I'm telling a story that comes from Scotland.
So for your story, you're telling a story.
Yes.
Oh, nice.
That comes Scotland. From Scotland.
All right.
I got this, all my information from history.com and mentalfloss.com. In December 1900, the boat Hesperus set sail for an island off the coast of northwest Scotland. This specific ship was captained by a James Harvey, who was on his way with a lighthouse keeper to relieve the other lighthouse keepers that were at the lighthouse.
Oh, I got you. It wasn't like they're going from one lighthouse to the other. It's bringing the replacement.
Relief. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
This lighthouse business is tricky.
After a few days, the ship arrived at the island, but something just didn't seem right. For one, they were not greeted by the lighthouse keepers that were already on the island. Not only that, it didn't seem that work had been done in preparation for the ship's arrival, even though they knew it was coming.
Oh, wow.
The three lighthouse keepers that were supposed to be there were nowhere to be found. This particular island called Eileen Moore, that's the best pronunciation, but that's what we'll call it.
Eileen Moore. Okay.
Was pretty remote. No one lived there except for some sheep. Sheep herders even called it the other country because they believe the island to be haunted and have an, quote, indefinable aura that could not be ignored.
Well, so then why do they have a lighthouse? Like, if no ships? Is it just because otherwise it's in the dark and people don't even see the island? I need lighthouse information
here.
Well,
lighthouses, I think, are strategically placed because you wouldn't put one, like, here in Arizona, you know? So, like, but it's probably a place that is, I don't know, but it's strategically
I guess
placed
my brain there. Was thinking it's a place to mark, like, it's bright so people know where to dock. But I guess if you can dock, you're not going to crash, so it's safe. So you don't need a lighthouse. Okay, I don't, yeah.
Back to my story. Joseph Moore, who was supposed to be the replacement keeper, was the first person to investigate the island. He found plates of food on the kitchen table, a clock that was stopped, and overturned furniture. Two of three coats belonging to the lighthouse keepers were also found, which confused them. After all, why would only, you know, two of the three men wear their coats?
Right.
Just one leave them behind, you know?
Yeah.
After the initial investigation, a full search of the island was initiated only to come up empty-handed. After the search, the captain sent a telegram to the mainland advising of what they had found, or in this case, hadn't found,
right.
Yeah. In the telegram, he stated, quote, on our arrival there this afternoon, no sign of life was to be seen on the island. Fired a rocket, but as no response was made, managed to land Moore, who went up to the station but found no keepers there. The clocks were stopped and other signs indicated that the accident must have happened a week ago.
Wait, the clocks were stopped?
Yeah.
That's weird, unless they need to routinely wind them.
Maybe, I don't know.
Like, oh, wow. Did you say they fired a rocket?
Yeah, so probably like a flare.
A flare?
Yeah,
okay.
I think so, yeah. After that, more investigations were obviously initiated. In these investigations, there was a lighthouse logbook entry from one of the previous keepers stating that there were severe winds like they hadn't seen in 20 years.
Oh, wow.
Additionally, he said that one of the other keepers was quiet and the third was crying, which was very unlikely behavior for this particular man. You know, a log from the following day reported more severe weather and that the three men were praying for their safety. That being said, there were no reported storms on the days correlating with the logbook entries, and weather was said to be calm until December 17th.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah. The final log in the book came from December 15th, though, stating, quote, storm
help!
Storm ended, sea calm, God is over all. So, yeah.
Really wow. Weird. So that's December, you said 17th?
15th is the log, and 17th is the weather was calm until the 17th.
Okay. And wait, and what day did they arrive on the island?
That I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah. So on the western landing platform was found damaged from recent storms that were said to reach as high as 200 feet above sea level.
Shit.
Yeah. With that, it was theorized that the men had gone to the western port to secure some things with rope and were taken out by water. Although possible, they didn't find bodies. The weather was supposedly calm, and these were well-trained lighthouse keepers that were said to know better than to be doing that.
Well, I mean, they don't even know how to wear a coat. So.
There's that. Others began to speculate that perhaps the men were eaten by a giant sea serpent, taken away by some other creature, or taken away by a ghost ship.
Oh.
Others believed that the men escaped on a boat to avoid paying debts.
All three of them?
Yeah. Others thought that perhaps they were kidnapped. Of all the stories out there, there are three theories that most people believe. The first was that one of the keepers, who was said to have a temper, started a physical fight with the other two men, which resulted in them falling to their deaths from the cliffs.
Yeah. Why are they fighting by the cliffs?
I know, right?
We have fisticuffs right here.
The second theory is that one of the men murdered the other two, disposed of their bodies in the water, and then jumped to his own death.
Oh, or fled.
Yeah. And the last theory, which most people believe, is that the two of the keepers were swept away while working on the West Landing. Then the third man went out to find them, only to be taken away by the storm as well.
Wow.
All great theories, but the truth is we will never know what happened to these three lighthouse keepers over 100 years ago. And there you have it, the story known as the Flannan Isles Mystery.
Ooh, that is super cool. That's really interesting. Yeah. Huh. Wow. So I wonder, it's so random, like what kind of training you have to be a lighthouse operator. Like you go online courses or something? Well,
I don't know about now, but I mean, you got to know like directions and like maps, how to read the maps and stuff like
wow,
that.
Wow. And I really thought it was just at night, turn on the light. And then during the day, turn off the light.
Speaking of, have you seen the movie The Lighthouse?
I have not.
Oh, that movie is, you should watch
it. It's good?
It's Robert Pattinson and Willem Dafoe.
Oh, yeah, that's
just
right.
Them too, and it's a trippy movie.
I heard it's good.
Yeah, I liked it.
Well, speaking of trippy, ooh, look at the segue. All right, I am going to be talking, and this is I think this might be my longest minisode story yet, but it's kind of cool. I know, right? Get ready to nap. Chris okay. has his pillow. I'm talking about the Yuba County Five. Mm-hmm. And this actually kind of came up to us a few weeks ago watching like
a top 10 video
on YouTube. And it was just so interesting that I had to go dig into it. And I'm going to be presenting that information now. Okay, so throwback time. And we've done so many throwbacks to previous episodes. Uh-huh. So y'all remember, and Chris corrected me on this right before we started, the Dietlov Pass incident that I talked about a few episodes ago.
Yes.
Well, during my research, I found that this story is actually referred to as the American Dietlov Pass incident. And you're going to see a lot of similarities. So it's kind of fun to be able to bring that into a mini-sode and share something that is related or similar to something that we've talked about before. But it's also, it might be weirder or more unexplained. So here we go. Ready? Joe Shones was having a heart attack. Isn't that a riveting start? That's really when I read that,
I first thought you were going to say Joe Schmo.
Joe Schmo had a heart attack. Joe Shones. I think that's like the start of a good novel. Joe Shones was having a heart attack. The 55-year-old Californian had felt fine just a few minutes previously, navigating his Volkswagen on a desolate mountain road near Rogers Cow Camp in the Plumas National Forest. Wow. Oh, dear Lord. I've had a long week. As he drove further into the night, snowdrifts slowed his tires. When he got out to push his car, the exertion brought on the searing pain in his chest. It was February 24th, 1978. Shones was miles from help, and Chris was 33 years old.
Whatever.
6 hours later, so it must have been a pretty mild heart attack, and he survived this whole ordeal, Joe Shones. 6 hours later, he saw a car pull up behind him.
6 hours.
Yeah, in this remote middle of nowhere. Six people got out. Five were men, and one of them was a woman holding a baby. Shone called for help, at which point the car headlights went out and they disappeared. He yelled into the darkness, but no one responded to the sound of his voice. So what the fuck is going on here? And who are these people that just ignored him? Well, to not answer that, because we don't get any clear answers in this damn story, we have to switch gears to the Yuba County Five. So on that same day, the 24th of February, 1978, five friends, Gary Mathias, Jack Hewitt, Bill Sterling, Ted Wire, and Jack Madruga, all these like easy names for me, were returning from a basketball game at California State University. Okay. The men, aged between 24 and 32, so they're young, and young strapping men, all had mild intellectual disabilities or mental illnesses.
Okay.
But they love basketball. Well, on their way back to their homes in Yuba County, the men stopped at a gas station just before closing time, and they brought some snacks. This was the last time they were definitively seen alive.
Hmm.
Yeah. So, they went missing. The men's parents alerted police whenever the Yuba County Five failed to return home, and a search began. A few days later, a park ranger working in that forest reported an abandoned car matching the one the men had been traveling in, stuck in snow. And I put that in air quotes. Okay. It was close to where Shones was parked having his heart attack.
What?
Yeah. So the search itself sounds pretty standard, you know, other than this weird heart attack.
Yeah.
But this is where things get really odd. Now, this is one of those stories where there's tons of physical evidence, but every piece of it raises more questions than it answers.
Oh,
so it's
shit.
Really interesting.
Yeah.
So in the case of the car, right off the bat, its location made no sense, because instead of driving south toward their homes, they went east to this forest, and somehow they ended up on this winding dirt road leading to the middle of nowhere, to this snow-covered forest. How they got lost and went to that place is still a mystery.
Story is already fucking crazy.
It's so weird. It's just going to get so much weirder.
I know, that's what.
Yeah. So on top of that, they found the car wasn't actually stuck in the snow. The wheels, sure, they spun freely, but police determined that the five men, all of whom were athletic and young, two of them had been in the army, could have easily pushed it easily. They could have easily.
Okay, Carol Channing.
Right? Did I have corn? They could have. They could have easily pushed it clear. In fact, the bottom of the car was completely free of like debris or damage. So this leads us to one of the biggest mysteries in this thing is, why did they abandon the car? Now, at this point, it's important to emphasize that while the men did have some disabilities, that probably played a factor in maybe why they ended up in this predicament.
Sasquatch.
It was Sasquatch. But they were fully capable of traveling on their own. I mean, one of them could drive.
Yeah.
So where did they go and what happened? Why did they do this? Well
you said they mysteriously disappeared. So yep. Nobody knows. I assume.
Well, kind of. You'll see. You'll see it's very Dyatlov here in a little bit. So an extensive search for the men turned up empty, mostly due to the heavy snow. This was in February. It would take until the summer to determine any of their fates. Well, some of their fates to be discovered.
Yeah,
so basically,
they had to
months.
Wait for the snow to thaw out before they found anybody.
Yep, exactly. And just think about that, though. Not a single shred of evidence or sign of them turned up from February until June. So in June, motorcyclists at a campsite detected a horrible smell coming from a Forest Service trailer.
Okay.
Inside, they found the body of Ted Wire.
Hmm.
The condition of his corpse indicated that he had survived in the trailer for weeks, possibly months, before he died of starvation. His shoes were missing and his body had been covered with sheets by someone else. And there was a watch nearby that didn't belong to him or any of the other men, because of course this case has all these vague points hinting at nothing that can be solved. So now it was later determined that most, if not all, the men had stayed in that trailer.
Yeah.
How do we know? Well, further searches found the partially eaten remains belonging to Madruga, and then they found Sterling's bones. Given the weather conditions at the time of their death, they almost certainly succumbed to hypothermia. 2 days later, Jack Hewitt's father found his clothes and part of his spine.
Oh my gosh.
So this kind of maybe sounds like, oh, a story of the guys getting out there and then finding shelter, but still starving and freezing to death in the snow. Well, two other questions come up. One, this trailer was up the mountain from where the car was abandoned.
Yeah.
Why did they head up instead of back down to civilization, which was the way they had come?
Yeah.
Second, why did they stay there for weeks? I know there's snow and stuff, but you would think eventually you're going to try to find help in some way, right?
Find a way out, yeah.
So then maybe you could argue that they did stay there because of the weather. Well, listen to this. It appears that while sheltering in the trailer, the men had ignored multiple flammable materials to start a fire, heavy winter clothing, and strangest of all, a massive store of food that would have kept them alive for over a year.
So they were...
There was food
they were,
and shelter and warmth,
they
everything they
all
needed.
Their rations.
They didn't know. The food was still there.
Oh.
There was plenty of food to keep them alive for a year that was still there. So then you might think, well, because of their disabilities, maybe they didn't find the food. Well, remember that two were in the army.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of them could drive. They weren't helpless, and they're smart enough to find this place. Well, some of the food was eaten. They found this food. They ate some of it, but then they stopped, and they all starved to death. So it's like, what? And they had, and also the ones that froze to death outside, there was plenty of warmth inside. So this is all crazy, and if there's foul play in this, it's never been uncovered. And to also leave it off with the most unexplained piece, I never mentioned Gary Mathias, one of the five.
Yeah.
Never been found. No idea where he's at. And before I stop, let's not forget Shones, the man who had the heart attack near the car. Why didn't they stop to help him? And who was this woman and baby that were with him, if that's who he did see when he was having his heart attack?
Oh, this is...
And that is the story of the Yuba County Five.
It's an insane story.
Isn't that wild? It's like Dietlov, but almost weirder.
Yeah, it's so weird.
And I actually did a debunk for this just because I was so interested. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to debate if I'm going to share it because it's a mini-sode. I'll share just a couple little points. During the interrogation or the questioning, Shones, who was having the heart attack, did at one point admit that his pain, he's having a heart attack. I mean, cut the guy some slack. His pain was so severe that he could have hallucinated some or all of what he
saw.
And so they did actually acknowledge that. The second part, I have to say this because I think this is so interesting, because there's a whole thing about the food. Like, why didn't they eat the food? That is the weirdest thing.
Yeah.
Well, it turns out that Ted Wire, which is one of the guys, his parents stated that he was completely lacking in common sense. In fact, they reported that he once had to be dragged out of bed to escape a fire because he was more concerned with oversleeping the next day and missing his job. So it sounds like, you know, he's so scared of missing work, he stays in bed during a fire. So it sounds like he's kind of a good person with a really good conscience.
Yeah.
It's just his disabilities got in the way of that. So experts speculated that if he was that good, he may have hesitated to eat food that didn't belong to him, even if it meant that he was going to starve to death.
Yeah.
And that's one theory that came out. But again, there's still three other people there that didn't seem to have that same, you know, moral, you know, compass that he did. Yet they somehow starved and froze to death despite all the crap going on. Oh,
that's so weird.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah.
Yep. So, y'all, the main episode is just going to get weirder.
Yeah. So have fun trying to guess what we're talking about this next week.
It's there. It's really there.
It's really there.
It's and this one, I would say, don't overthink it. It's the most obvious thing you could think of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, everyone. Well, tune in next week, hear what we're talking about, and bye.